Welcome to Healing with Worth, a podcast dedicated to healthy recovery and instilling hope in the wake of betrayal trauma. We are women who have experienced this intimately and want to offer hope to other women. While we may interview professionals on the show, the content should not be taken as therapeutic advice and is not meant to replace therapeutic healing. If you would like to join one of our free online Worth groups to help with your betrayal trauma, you may find us at healingwithworth.org. Welcome to Healing with Worth. We are so glad to be here today. We have another amazing guest with us. Her name is Emily Sanchez, and we are just so excited to have her here with us today. This year, we have wanted to focus more on issues around divorce and preparing for divorce because we have such a vast audience and some people are trying to stay and some people are wanting to go. We just wanted to provide a realm of support for everyone. So Emily Sanchez is with us and she is a divorce coach. And she specifically works with LDS women in helping them to navigate the road to divorce. A little bit about Emily. She was raised in Thatcher, Arizona as one of 10 children. She has a bachelor's degree from NAU and completed training and certification through strategic intervention at Robin Madonna's training, APSATS, IFS, which is Internal Family Systems, and is currently pursuing her master's degree in social work from WNMU. Again, she is a divorce coach, and she also works with distinguished family law attorney Kevin Jensen, offering seminars and coaching. She is supported by her amazing husband, Yasser Sanchez, and her 5 children. And you can find her on Facebook, Instagram, and Apple Podcasts as LDS Divorce Coach. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, we are just so excited to talk about this today. We are talking a little bit about shooting for the stars and creating a blueprint for our higher selves. But before we get started, Emily, I want to just kind of give you a few minutes here just to share a little bit about your experience and the road that brought you to this place of becoming a divorce coach.
Yes, thank you. Well, I went through a divorce myself. It's been 16 years now. However, at the time and before that, I wasn't involved in any wonderful program that's offered like Worth. And I was a little bit on my own. And I remember going to a counselor and he turned me away, essentially. He was like, "Oh, no, you've got some great cognitive skills. You're fine. You don't have flawed thinking. You're fine." And I just remember being a little bit devastated by that because I was kind of about to go through the divorce and I was just crushed. I felt like I had an existential crisis, that everything I had been taught my whole life was never quit. And you're in this for eternity, and this is a big deal, which it is. But I kind of had a crisis with that, even though I wouldn't say that it was totally my choice to divorce. It was one of those where you work and work and work and work, and you can't change someone's agency. You can't change someone's habits. And you're right. You guys know.
Oh, yeah. We know.
You know how that goes. Right. Yep. So yep. I guess later in life, after the storm and after everything calmed and working as a co-parent with our daughter still, and then both of us remarried, happily remarried. Like you said, I have 4 more children. And then I just got into wanting to be a life coach. I just felt like, this is going to sound weird, but who cares? When I was listening to Tony Robbins, he's one of the first life coaches out there ever to exist. I just felt like I was listening to myself. And so I went through his training and certification, and they kept saying, "You need a niche, you need a niche." And I was like, "What is that? What is that?" And then I came to the divorce side of it. And my husband's a lawyer, and his colleague used to do family law, and I knew Kevin. And so I just started into that so I could make sense and help others with parenting plans, make sense of the jargon. And so because I'm around the law side of it, I felt like it was a good fit for me. And it is, using my experience and my coaching together. Oh gosh, I got to tell you, I love it. I love helping. That's just kind of how I am in general. But truly giving from the heart of what I feel I have the best experience in, that's where I find joy.
The niche is so needed too. So we appreciate all the work that you do. Many of our listeners have been really hit sideways in their life with their husband's involvement in porn, and it's something that they didn't think that would be an issue. Many of our listeners, including myself, didn't realize how much abuse was associated with the pornography use.
Mm-hmm.
They're experiencing relational trauma. They're experiencing the physical effects of trauma. They are in survival mode. We have many of our listeners who may be in a slightly different stage where they're getting out of denial. They're coming to understand a new reality for them. They're experiencing a lot of grief, a lot of anger. Many of our listeners are just coming to grips with a new reality for their life, whether that means divorce or potentially lowering their standards to live in this unideal marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems super overwhelming. And we're going to discuss something that you're really passionate about, which is helping women achieve those higher desires for themselves. But mm-hmm. there are many women, many of our listeners, who, because they're just stuck in that survival mode, they can't even dream about their higher self because they're stuck in the muck of it all. So I just want to start there with that. Let's talk about what the higher self is and how you would help a woman who is stuck in the muck to even start to see her higher self.
So I would say there's kind of two phases to this. The first is figuring out your meaning frame. What do I mean by that? We all experience emotion based on what we make something mean. And we have cultural context in that, especially in our culture. And we are in this patriarchal society. The Mormon culture started out a little bit puritanical. That was the times of the saints over in the eastern United States. Many of them came from Puritan backgrounds. We've got the amazing stalwart pioneers. A lot of us are pioneer stock. Okay, yeah, that's me. Like the never quit, the stubborn till you die, the faithful, right? And all of those are super good qualities, and they are all so part of our identity. They're also part of our identity that sometimes we get stuck in meaning frames that are actually not true. They're based off truth, but they're not totally true. An example of that is my dad taught me to never quit. He instilled that in all of us. And so I had a meaning frame that I could not let go of the marriage, that there was something wrong with me if I quit. And it was just unhealthy. So what I do with my clients is I start there, because we can't get our true desires, right? We don't even know what they are when we're stuck in these frames. And so I question our core beliefs so that we can get to our core identity of who we are, what we want, and what we deserve. And then I transfer over to, okay, let's think about our core self. And let's think about maybe our reflective self. So let me explain a little bit. A reflective self is caring what other people think. It's reflecting. How is this action reflecting? What is the consequences of my action to everyone else? Instead of what the core person inside you wants. And a lot of times in our culture, we forgo the core self, because we want to please and reflect goodness. The problem is we are self-betraying our core self over and over, and we don't realize that we're doing this. And this is where boundaries come in. This is where setting what we want, what we will tolerate, and what we don't. Now, there's consequences, right, when we do that. So, I mean, there's so much in that, you guys, that is personalized that I could do in coaching, but that's the basis of it.
It's funny because I have been studying this Anatomy of Peace. I don't know if you're familiar with this book.
I'm not.
It talks about exactly what you're saying, is this going against our core self puts us in the inside of this box. There are different kinds of boxes, but when we betray ourselves, then we come up with justifications for why we betray ourselves. Mm. And those justifications come because we need to be seen as, or maybe we're better than somebody, or we're worse than somebody, or these different things that we tell ourselves to justify putting ourselves in this box and staying in this box. And when we're in this box, we can't be at peace with anybody else because these justifications create war within us. And so we can't be at peace with anybody in our lives if we're at war inside of ourselves.
Yes. And Naomi, that's a lot of what internal family systems teaches. So in IFS, you have the core self who is the director. But in IFS, they believe that we all have parts to ourselves. We all have, you know, a manager that has to manage everything. We have a firefighter. We have the child who's fearful. There's so many different parts of us. And I guess that you can think of someone who has multiple personality disorder and their parts just went haywire. So it is true that we do have these different sides to ourselves, and that, like you were saying, they can go at war. And so the more we foster and develop attributes of our core self, the more that core self can guide the others, that it might be maladaptive, and that core self can get them back to being adaptive.
Where do you even start with that?
I start with asking, what do you desire? What do you want? Anything. Like, tell me what you want. And a lot of them don't know because it's been stomped on. It's been pushed down. And so the ultimate would just be happy marriage. Can we just have our normalcy here?
I want my husband to stop porn. I want to have a happy marriage.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
So we kind of lay out, and I call it the blueprint for your life. Suffering happens when the blueprint of your life does not match what's actually happening. A lot of times you have to completely change the blueprint. And then, like I said, there are those consequences for, okay, this is what you want. How bad do you want it? There is the leverage component. There's a leverage component in how much pain versus pleasure you want to or can handle in that experience. And I have scales. I have 1 to 10. You know, you do that. It's pretty intricate little number work sometimes, but that's how we start with someone that really has been stomping down on their desires. So it's learning how to even bring up a desire, then take the heat, because a lot of times it's conflict when you bring it up. This is what I want, and this is what we're doing. Maybe it's something, you know, that will make the kids mad, or your husband mad, or your co-parent mad. We don't want anyone mad. Right. But it's as we exercise that, we fill our own core up. We build ourselves back. You have to. And then all these things start happening at the same time. You build a self-respect. I always say, I feel like self-respect is action. Action comes before the feeling. You can't just walk around and you're like, yeah, I feel self-respect.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. And what are some of the common obstacles that arise that you see? I know we kind of touched on them, but maybe an example of somebody having a goal and some of the obstacles that they might run into.
Well, here's just a super simple one, and anybody can apply it I just heard this one mom. She is married. She wanted to learn to ski. It's just something she wanted to do. She didn't want to bring it up because of all the schedules of the kids, how they were going to fit that in the family life. It's something that simple. Then she felt guilty because she thought, well, maybe I can get my kids into skiing and we could make it a family thing. Do you see what she's doing? She's trying to take the culture, what the culture says. No, you need to make sure you're a good mom in doing this. So maybe you can incorporate the kids, right? Instead of just going and learning how to ski. She had to kind of shed those layers and be like, you know what? I want this for me. And so she did. And guess what? Her kids have little things they do. They go and support the lacrosse game. They go and support the husband's art, but they go and do different things. And then the kids can see, oh, we can support mom doing this. She's gone. Yeah, for a little bit. I need your support. That's what we do in this family. We are a team. And then she comes back. So obstacle number one is just conflict, right? In a co-parenting situation, what happens a lot in my own life is I have to deal with two sides. So I have to make sure that the co-parent, maybe we're planning something for Christmas. And yes, we have everything in the parenting plan. It is never going to be perfect, okay? And so you have to step outside of yourself and get comfortable with being uncomfortable because someone's going to be mad at you. It might be your husband that you're married to now. That's like, oh, I feel that you're catering to him all the time. So you have to mitigate and be strong enough to, again, allow your desires of what you want to come first. It's like the airplane mask situation. Put it on first before you put it on to others. And then as you do it, like you were saying, your core self, you actually have a lot more to give and a lot more love that you can bring forth to other people. So that's a couple of examples.
The social conditioning around all of this is so intense. I'm listening to you describe this very simple situation and how as women, we are programmed to make sure, quote unquote, everyone else is taken care of. Mm-hmm. And how do we move into a different space?
I think the number one is just bringing it into awareness that you do it. When my clients see and are confronted with something that they've done subconsciously, it's so set in their subconscious, and then they see it, a lot of times that can remove a lot of layers just by being in awareness. So that's why I take a lot of time with the meaning frame and what everything means. What does a good mom mean to you? A lot of times my clients, they have to forget a lot when they're in meanings that maybe don't make sense, such as what makes a good mom? Let's start there. Well, one of my clients was saying, I had a toothache and then I had to come home and I had to do home evening. And if I didn't, I just felt like a bad mom and that I was missing all these things. I had the appointment for my toothache or earache or whatever it was. So I missed a soccer game and she just kept saying, I'm a bad mom, blah, blah. And I just said, what do you have to forget to believe you're a bad mom? What are you having to forget, you guys? Like, that is a big question I ask a lot because it's so interesting. People forget so much of what they know to be true, what they know to be true about a loving God who would not deny you of certain things, if you know what I'm saying. People have to forget that. That's a meaning frame. People have to forget what a truly good mom, someone who's trying is. So we do a lot with meaning.
Yeah. I think that's helpful because I've even had to, just with setting boundaries, because in our situations, often you've got a spouse that doesn't like boundaries. They're going to tell you that these aren't Christ-like. This is abusive. And these techniques of gaslighting and kind of flipping it back around on you. So you really have to be clear and have that clear mind frame to be able to see, no, actually, this is not what you're saying. This is good for me to protect myself and to keep myself safe.
Yes, it takes practice to not be reflective. It takes practice to rely on what you think is best. And I'm glad that you brought that up. Another thing that I really push my clients is just for their general state. When we are in these wanting our desires to be expressed frames, when we are wanting to do this, we know we are going to be met with conflict. You're going to be met with conflict regardless if you try to discover your desires or push them down. And so I concentrate a lot on our state. What do I mean by that? Just our general state. Think when you are just in a state where you can't even think of words. Unfortunately, I do this a lot, like before bed. I can't think. Like, I'll walk into the pantry or something and I'm like, why am I here? That is a low state, right?
Yeah.
And then think of yourself. Do you ever have these moments where you're walking down the street and you just start strutting? You're like, oh my gosh, where did this energy come from? I could do anything right now. Why can't I be like this all the time? And so a lot of my work is creating a beautiful state.
Where we're strutting all the time.
Yep. How you can stay in that peak state. And it's very, very hard when you're hit with trauma. That is a very, very difficult, like you said, people, especially listening to this podcast, are at all different stages, right? So give yourself some grace if you're right in the middle of that. Getting to that peak state is harder, but it's doable.
Yeah.
It's doable. Yeah. You just have to go extra hard in the mind and body.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I think even for myself, I've had a lot of practice, and even still, sometimes when that conflict is so intense on the other end, it takes a lot of work to hold on to that reality of, no, this is the right thing for me. I am doing what is right. I am being Christ-like.
Yes, you have to build those anchors. And I truly believe that all of this too has a foundation on our identity. Right? The core self, everything. Basically, when you've pushed down your desires so long, you've lost your identity. You don't really know who you are. You can't stand firm in that anchor. You can't stand firm in what you want and your desires and what you even know is true and right. So it's all about, let's reform that identity. Let's build it to what you want. And just an example is when you believe that you're loved and you love yourself, you're going to act in loving ways towards yourself. Here's a different type of practical example. If you think of yourself as athletic, you are going to act in athletic ways or challenge yourself athletically. You know, there's people who have smoked for years and they say to people, well, I'm a smoker. You see, it's so in their identity. Well, I have this problem. I'm an addict. It's in their identity that they will perform according to what they think they are. And so you have to work on that identity, who you are, and anchor in. And then the actions, they will get easier and easier. They're hard at first because you don't recognize it, because you haven't been acting or identifying that way.
I'm thinking and I'm reflecting back on my mother in particular, but even myself to some extent, where being a mom was really the desire of my heart. When you talk to my mom, she says, that is all I ever wanted to be.
Mm.
So she spent her time devoted to supporting her children in whatever endeavor that they wanted. But after your children are gone, you have to come to some space. They're gone. Now what?
Right.
For her, that was just something that she had always desired for herself. Like there was nothing different that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
She was able to fulfill her desires.
My thought is, is that for sure her only desire, or is that something that was socially taught that should be her only desire and the most important desire of her life?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The cultural messaging around that.
Yeah. Beyond that, she has to figure out now, who am I without my children? Because you're a person before you have children, and you're going to be a person after your children are grown up. You'll still always be a mom, but there is more to you than that identity alone, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But the cultural messaging around that is really intense.
Right.
Right.
Oh, it is. It's very generational, I see. Same with my mother. I mean, she raised 10 children. It was everything. And it had to be in order for us to exist. I think she did an amazing job. And I will say of this generation, what I've noticed is they actually have pretty solid core. I'm sure there's been reflective selves in there wanting to look a certain way in front of whoever, according to the cultural messaging. But what I've noticed about my mom is it fulfilled her. Our successes fulfilled her. That was her desire. And she looked inward to what she felt. She had to. There was too much of us and doing all crazy stuff. She had to be solid in her core and validate herself in our successes and our failures. But it did fulfill her. And so there's nothing wrong. If that is your desire and that's what you want to do, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if you feel like there's a side of you that's not coming forth, that you wish you could break out and be your own person, if motherhood in itself is not fulfilling who you truly are, then find a way to express who you are and to make sure those desires are being met by you.
Yeah, those are some great thoughts. Well, Emily, we really appreciate you being on the podcast with us this week. For all of you listeners, we are going to have Emily on the podcast next week as well. So please stay tuned and join us next week when we will talk with Emily about divorce. Thanks for joining us this week on Healing with Worth. Make sure to visit our website, healingwithworth.org, if you would like to enroll in an online therapist-led support group. We'll see you next time.